Hello, this is the Archaeology News Weekly, and I'm David Connolly, and first off, Happy Christmas to you all. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. The first houses in the Sa'ok region of Iran were built over 7,500 years ago. Menagerie and Hagarkin temples in Malta have been approved for covering. The Bronze Age axes that were rescued from the eBay sale. And 20,000-year-old human footprints have been found in Australia. Prehistoric arrowheads were stolen from Florida Museum. A conference will be held in Dover later next year called The Cultural Contact in Prehistoric Europe in the Bronze Age. Prehistoric tools have been unearthed in Bengal, and a new Stonehenge is planned in Northamptonshire. There's a welcome return of the Hollywood Stone in Ireland, and a Bronze Age treasure trove was discovered by a gardener in Milton Keynes. Cloud cover also foils solstice celebrations at Newgrange. And a replica of a 6,800-year-old timber circle has been reopened in Germany for the solstice. Europeans have also been found to inherit their looks from Stone Age hunters and not Neolithic farmers. Recent archaeological studies of the ancient Sa'ok Tepe in Iran indicate that the first houses were built at the site around 7,500 years ago. Sa'ok Tepe was the first ancient tepe in Iran, which was excavated by archaeologists. It was first excavated by French archaeologist Romain Grishman in 1933. During his excavations, Grishman unearthed a giant structure which he called the Brick Structure of Sa'ok. Sadiq Malik Shah Mirzadi, head of the excavation team, said that the northern hill of Sa'ok was studied during the last season of excavations. Shirmazadi said that the excavation of the southern part of the hill and other recent studies show that many ethnic groups lived in Sa'ok over the course of history. The current stage of studies of the ancient tepe is complete, but a new stage of excavations will be started if the Archaeological Resource Centre approves the project. Previous excavation seasons at Sa'ok Tepe led to the new discoveries about this prehistoric site. A massive earthen ziggurat, some clay jars, and the skeletons of a man and a girl who were most probably buried under debris during an earthquake, as well as hundreds of other artefacts unearthed during the excavations. The temples of Menagerie and Hagarkin will soon be covered after the Malta Environment and Planning Authority Board yesterday gave the green light to the construction of shelters to protect the megalithic monuments. The two important sites date back to the late Neolithic period, approximately 3,600 BCE to 2,500 BCE. The area designated as the Hagarkin and the Menagerie Heritage Park consists of a piece of land measuring around 40 hectares. Following MEPA's approval, the next step is the design and construction of the temporary protective shelters for the temple structures and the construction and furnishing of a visitor centre. Accessibility issues, audiovisual facilities and security measures, including the installation of high-tech surveillance systems, will also be addressed. The protective shelters will be temporary for a 30-year period. The tent over Hagarkin will be 11.5 metres high, while that at Menagerie will be 9 metres high. The principles behind MEPA's decision to approve the application were the improved management of archaeological sites and the protection of the temples. The visual impact of the tent would have a crucial factor during the application process. Following the setting up of design specifications and in line with UNESCO's guidelines, an international design competition was launched in November 2003. The winning design will now be constructed on site. The Menagerie Neolithic Temple was the target of vandals in April 2001, when around 60 megaliths were dislodged, with the result that some were actually broken. A series of 15 axe heads were sold on eBay for £205, a British coroner heard. The 3,000-year-old haul was eventually handed to the British Museum after it was bought by a Dutch archaeologist. The rare Bronze Age treasure was believed to have been dug up using metal detectors by a couple only known as Stuart and Tracy, from Milton Keynes area of Buckinghamshire in England. When the couple moved to France in 2004, they gave their finds to their friends, John and Lorraine, who then promptly put them up for sale on eBay. A treasure trove inquest heard 5 bids were made on eBay, and the axe heads were finally shipped to a Dutch collector, who paid just a fraction of their real value. Luckily, however, the archaeologist, an experimental metallurgist at a theme park, reconsidered their value and got in touch with the UK museum authorities. The find was described by expert Ross Turrell as only the second ever Bronze Age collection to be found in the Buckinghamshire area. The region is rich in archaeological finds, which have been uncovered with the construction of the new city of Milton Keynes. However, the coroner heard that a lot of treasure was never handed in by unscrupulous users of metal detectors, who only operate under the cover of darkness. These people are known as Nighthawks. It would have been such a waste if the pieces had been sold individually, Ms. Turrell told the inquest at Milton Keynes. Now that it will stay together, it will be available for people to see and study, as you can only study what is available, and this is going to be an amazingly valuable addition to the collection. The axe heads held by the British Museum are set to be handed to the Buckinghamshire County Museum in Aylesbury, and they are very grateful to Mr. Zudowick, as he could have kept quiet and they would never have known. At a treasure trove inquest, Milton Keynes coroner Rodney Corner formally declared the treasure belonged to the Crown. And since 1996 Treasure Act, finders in the United Kingdom are no longer keepers and must report any objects more than 300 years old. It should be pointed out, however, that in Scotland, all objects are declared as treasure trove. Hundreds of human footprints dating back to about 20,000 BCE, the oldest in Australia and the largest collection of its kind in the world, have been discovered in Mungo National Park in western New South Wales. They were left by children, adolescents and adults at the height of the last ice age as they ran and walked across the moist clay area near the Willandera Lakes. The first footprints were spotted by Mary Papin Jr. of the Muti Muti people 2 years ago, and more than 450 more have been uncovered by a team led by Steve Webb of Bond University. They were made in silty clay containing calcium carbonate that hardened like concrete as it dried. These imprints were preserved when they were covered by a layer of clay and then sand from the shifting dunes. We've got 23 trackways of men running, children walking and wandering around, and I want to find where these tracks go and what these people were doing by following them about, said Webb. The prints, ranging in size from 13 centimetres to 30 centimetres, provide an insight into the anatomy and behaviour of the people who left them. Some of the people appear to be hunting, with emu and kangaroo footprints also in the area, and what appear to be spear holes in the ground. One man, estimated at 6 foot tall, appeared to be sprinting at around about 12 miles an hour. Another set of tracks, perhaps of a weary child, slows the group down to a speed of only 3 to 5 kilometres an hour. The strangest tracks of all were left by what appears to be a one-legged man. The theories are either he was playing a hopping game with a child running alongside, or he was standing with one leg in a boat while he propelled himself through shallow water. The traditional custodians of the area, members of the Willandera Lakes Region World Heritage Area, Three Traditional Tribal Groups Elders Corporation, said they were very excited by the find. Miss Papin, a Muti Muti elder, said walking alongside the footprints was like walking with a family group today. They're the same people. Roy Kennedy, also an elder, said the area had been a special meeting place for his tribe since the dream time. It was an oasis in the desert. The Pleistocene period is from around 1.8 million to 10,000 years ago and includes most of the recent ice age. The footprints were dated through a technique known as optically stimulated luminescence of the sand at between 19,000 to 23,000 years old. About 20,000 years ago, the now dry lakes would have contained fish, mussels and crayfish. The team estimated the height of the people from their foot size and their speed from the distance between paces. Professor Webb has also recently excavated 2 17,000-year-old skeletal remains found about 6 kilometres away. They were very athletic and very strong and fit, and he assumes that some of the men on this site were very similar. Dave Johnson, chairman of the Elders Corporation, said the site was closed to the public to preserve it, and the elders were developing a management, conservation and tourism plan. Webb estimated that his team has uncovered less than a third of the prints in the clay pan beneath the dunes. Australia's oldest human remains are 40,000 years old and were found in Lake Mungo in Mungo National Park, where the footprints were discovered. Florida state and county authorities are investigating the theft of more than a dozen arrowheads and a ceremonial knife from the Crystal River Archaeological State Park. The items were stolen from a visitor centre display case that housed items from the Deptford period ranging from 500 BCE to 500 CE. The thief or thieves did not touch any other items in the 9 exhibit areas at the centre museum point, as they obviously knew exactly what they were after. One or two of the stolen items may have been replicas, he said, but the other items were irreplaceable and probably were valued at least into the thousands of dollars. The Sheriff's Office and State Department of Environmental Protection's Park Patrol are investigating the burglary, but it's disheartening to think that someone would steal from the citizens of Florida. What these people do, for the most part, is steal a piece of a puzzle that may have allowed us to learn more of how these people lived in ancient times. The security system at the visitor centre has now been upgraded as a result of the theft, but Park Ranger Susan Clemens said that this should have happened sooner. She has criticised the visitor centre's security system for months, but nobody cared enough about what belonged to the public to secure it correctly. In addition to the artefacts housed in the visitor centre, the park includes burial mounds as high as 15 feet and a 30-foot-high temple mound. This was the first forced entry burglary since the centre opened 40 years ago, and anyone who has any information about the burglary should contact the Sheriff's Office at 726-4488 and ask for Detective Luther Willis on extension 337. To mark the occasion of the Ringlemere Gold Cup being placed on display alongside the Dover Bronze Age boat in Dover Museum, the Dover Bronze Age Boat Trust is organising a 2-day conference in October 2006 with the theme Bronze Age Connections, Cultural Contact in Prehistoric Europe. The symposium hopes to bring together a wide range of scholars from many different specialisms to explore the economic, social and symbolic nature of cultural contact along the northwest European seaboard in prehistory, and the practical means by which cross-channel relations could be maintained. And the venue is the Dover Harbour Board Cruise Terminal in Kent on Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd of October 2006. For more information, contact bronzeageboat at btopenworld.com. Archaeologists will soon visit Lapur, Birbhum, in West Bengal, India, where weapons dating back to the Stone Age were recently found. A number of Stone Age artefacts have been unearthed recently by villagers, and if dating of these tools confirms the archaeologists' belief, then the Stone Age prehistory of Bengal will have to be rewritten. Lapur will become the third Stone Age settlement in the state. Previously, two Stone Age settlements were known, Shushunia and Maluti Sadargat. A week ago, discovery of a borer, scraper and other tool types believed to be used by hunter-gatherers of the Middle Paleolithic were made during the excavation of a pond in Gopalpur village and has created the possibility of a new site belonging to the hunter-gatherers of the Paleolithic. Professor Viswa Bharati, Professor of Archaeology and a member of the Standing Advisory Body of the Archaeological Survey of India, and Professor Subrata Chakraborty rushed to the spot after being informed about the tools being found in the course of the digging. Daventry District Council in Northamptonshire, England, has agreed unusual plans to build a stone henge at the top of a famous landmark near Crick. The council last week debated plans to install 4 10-ton rocks at compass points around Cracks Hill to create a unique stone circle about 30 metres from the top of the hill. A fifth stone will be set into the ground at the summit and would have an insert on the top pointing to local features and providing a short explanation of Cracks Hill. A report compiled for the planning committee said that Army Chinook helicopters could be brought in to airlift the boulders into place. The stone circle would be made of carboniferous limestone from Harlestone or another local quarry. It also adds that the intention is to involve local people, groups and schools in the preparation of the stones prior to their installation. The information supporting the application mentions that the stones could be transported to the site by canal, road or air, with final positioning using helicopters. The council will seek grants from bodies such as the Arts Council to fund the project. Northamptonshire Heritage will also be notified 7 days in advance of any work taking place so it can oversee ground excavations owing to the historic and archaeological nature of the site. The Hollywood Stone returned home to Glendalough, County Wicklow in Ireland, after over 20 years of resting and storage at the National Museum in Dublin. Dr. Pat Wallace, director of the National Museum, decided to loan the Hollywood Stone out to Glendalough Visitor Centre for public display. Environment Minister Dick Rock unveiled the stone in the Visitor Centre and thanked Dr. Wallace for allowing its return. particular considering its strong links with the main pilgrimage route to the monastic settlement. Some local Wicklow men out hunting ferrets discovered the Holywood Stone in 1908. It was lying face down beside a grassy lane near Holywood in West Wicklow. This was the start of St Kevin's Road, the main medieval trade and pilgrimage route between the Wicklow coastal plains and inland Ireland, and the stone appears to have marked the start of the route. On the face of the stone is carved a maze-like pattern or labyrinth. There are examples of labyrinths from Irish prehistoric rock art, leading to suggestions that may have been carved in the Bronze Age. However, this design is also known from the Christian era, and on the Holywood Stone, the twists and turn of the maze, ending at a central cross, can be seen as a symbolic of the pilgrim's route towards his destination. The location beside St Kevin's Road and similar labyrinths on the floor of a cathedral in Siena in Italy suggested it was carved in medieval times. A hoard of Bronze Age artefacts which have been discovered in a garden in England has been declared treasure trove. The items, which include spears, sword parts, axe heads, was discovered by Simon Francis as he landscaped a garden in Eton near Norwich in April. The discovery was one of the biggest finds in the county and was almost thrown in a skip. Mr. Target, a company director and an amateur archaeologist, called the authorities, and Dr. Tim Pestle, curator of archaeology at Norwich Castle Museum, said the items were one of the largest Bronze Age hoards ever found in Norfolk. The edges were still sharp. In fact, one of the spears was still able to cut you. The 149 artefacts, with dates going back to 800 BCE, are believed to have been from a local foundry and are worth around £10,000. The Norwich coroner declared the hoard a treasure trove because it was money or coins, gold, silver or bullion, which had been hidden or concealed and has been found by accident. The finds are currently displayed at Norwich Castle Museum in a buried treasure exhibition until January the 15th, but there are fears that the museum lacks the budget to keep the items in Norfolk. Cloud covers prevented the sun from shining into an ancient passage tomb at Newgrange in County Meath in Ireland. Around 30 lucky people had secured access to the monument to watch the rising sun illuminate the central chamber on the shortest day of the year. The sun will also be in a similar position in the sky for a few days, so some other people may get an opportunity to see the phenomenon until the end of the week. At the winter solstice this week, also in Germany, they opened a replica of a mysterious wooden circle that has been believed to be a temple of the sun built by a lost culture 6,800 years ago. The circle of posts in a flat river plain at Gossek, south of Berlin, has mystified scientists since its discovery in 1991 by an archaeologist studying the landscape from the air. An excavation found post holes and what may be the remains of ritual fires. Gossek has been dubbed the German Stonehenge, though it is twice as old as the Stonehenge megalithic circle, and has no stones. The original wood has rotted away long ago, but new palisades, or wooden walls, were constructed at Gossek this year. In a public works scheme, 2,300 oak poles were erected in a circle on the same site over a seven-month period, with gateways opening to points of the compass, where the sun rises and sets on December the 21st. There are now two concentric wooden palisades, each 2.5 metres high, as well as a ditch and an earthen wall. The Gossek Circle was apparently erected by Europe's first civilization and is one of the best studied of 150 monumental sites arrayed through Germany, the Czech Republic, Austria and Slovenia. The realization that a very early European farming people built such vast sites has arrived in little more than a decade. The culture is known only from that of a stroked ornamented ceramic ware from fragments of pottery it left. The jars and bowls had their decoration jabbed into soft clay with a kind of fork to form zigzag lines. The whole period of stroke-ornamented pottery is limited to 4,900 to 4,650 BCE. François Bertem, who heads the Prehistoric Archaeology Institute at nearby Halle-Wittenberg University, claims the site marks the start of world astronomy and surmises that it was a place of fertility rituals that would have included weddings. Excavation of the 6,000 square metre site found two sacrificial pits containing fragments of human bones. There was evidence for a very hot fire in both, but the ash has already been removed, which is seen as a sign that the humans were sacrificed. The dig also turned up hundreds of pottery fragments and cattle bones. However, his views remain controversial, and Christoph Heiermann, spokesman for the Saxony State Archaeological Service, said that they prefer just to speak of a central place where people gathered. they don't know what they did there, and maybe they weren't even temples, they were perhaps even markets. Europeans inherit their looks from Stone Age hunters, new research suggests. Scientists studied ancient skeletons from Scandinavia to North Africa and Greece, comparing ancient and modern facial features. Their analysis suggests modern Europeans are closely related and descended from prehistoric indigenous people. Later Neolithic settlers, notably immigrants who introduced farming from the Near East some 7,500 years ago, contributed little to how Europeans look today, the researchers add. The study suggests that the arrival of farming did not signal a broad wave of colonization, as some scientists had thought. Rather, native hunter-gatherers absorbing the farming way of life and those who brought it. The findings are based on 24 face measurements of modern-day Europeans compared with those of their prehistoric predecessors. The team focused on facial dimensions which are neutral and don't change as human populations adapt over time to different environments and lifestyles. Because these features are passed down generation to generation, they're very good markers of human ancestry, according to the lead study author, Loring Brace. The University of Michigan anthropologist says the craniofacial remains of late Stone Age Europeans reflect those of earlier inhabitants who lived 35,000 to 10,000 years ago. Ancient people had heavier brow ridges than modern Europeans. The faces were also broader and the jaws heavier. Skeletal remains from Greece and elsewhere are thought to represent Neolithic settlers who introduced farming from modern-day Syria, Jordan and Israel. Brace said that the remains have facial measurements that don't match those of most present-day Europeans. The anthropologist added that despite some similarities with modern Mediterranean populations, the further north and west you get, the less they resemble the people living there now. Modern Europeans don't look like the incoming Neolithic farmers, he said. It's pretty clear that there's a very much larger component of indigenous foraging people across Europe, and they existed in far greater numbers than the archaeological record has led us to believe. The study suggests that Neolithic remains, which have been taken as evidence of large-scale colonization, are misleading. Brace says pots associated with Neolithic farmers tended to disintegrate into countless shards, creating the impression of a larger presence than was actually the case. Earlier farmers also buried their dead together, unlike the native inhabitants, leaving groups of bodies for archaeologists to later uncover, along with other artifacts. The researchers say the fact that incoming settlers didn't pass on telltale facial characteristics to later Europeans suggests that they were absorbed by the indigenous hunter-gatherers. Recent DNA analysis of the skeletons of prehistoric farmers buried in Germany, Austria and Hungary appears to show that they contributed little to the European gene pool. A quarter of those analysed remains share a DNA signature that is now extremely rare worldwide and which has left virtually no trace on living Europeans. Those findings, described last month in the journal Science, suggest that the contribution of early farmers could be close to zero, according to Peter Foster, archaeology research fellow at Cambridge University in England. Other experts now broadly agree that the spread of farming across Europe represents more of a cultural legacy than a genetic one. You do have small groups of people migrating from the Near East, but in most other parts of Europe, particularly Western and Northern Europe, you have local hunter-gathering people adopting farming. The German government angrily rebuked a former hostage yesterday who was determined to return to Iraq, despite being held captive for 3 weeks by a Sunni gang. Susanne Osthoff, a 43-year-old archaeologist, announced this week on Al Jazeera television that she would go back to her work in northern Iraq, trying to set up a German cultural centre in Erbil. Angela Merkel's new government, which regards the freeing of Frau Osthoff this month as its first foreign policy triumph, is furious. It made huge efforts to secure her release and is widely believed to have paid a ransom. It has now blocked all funding for her project and has told her that she should now leave the region immediately. She is believed currently to be in Jordan with her 12-year-old daughter, preparing to return. German newspapers have been full of letters complaining about how much she has cost the taxpayer. Peter Scholl-Latour, the country's leading Middle Eastern expert, complained she is absolutely irresponsible and just kicking the government in the shins. Frau Osthoff, however, seems likely to go ahead with her plans, despite the national relief at her release. She refused to return to Germany for Christmas. Although she was released on December the 18th, she has yet to telephone her mother. Frau Ostov converted to Islam, speaking Arabic, and was married to a nomadic tribesman from the region near the Iraqi-Syrian border. She plainly considers Iraq to be her home. The circumstances of her abduction are now beginning to leak out. She was due to travel north from Baghdad for a meeting about her project, and her driver, however, took her to a house in the capital, where she was then pulled into an apartment by three men. The driver appears to have been working with the kidnappers and has since disappeared. British Special Forces in Iraq offered their assistance to Germany, which has no troops there, but Germany declined. Evidently, the kidnappers made contact. One of the middlemen, according to the German media reports, may have actually been one of the kidnappers. He has also dropped out of sight. Frau Ostov was unharmed, and according to security sources quoted in Der Spiegel, the sharp-tongued archaeologist made full use of her Arabic fluency to reprimand the kidnappers, and it appears they were actually quite relieved to see her go. This is actually very interesting, considering the recent petition that Badger placed to find her release. If you'd like to discuss this more, we'd be very interested in your opinions. Remember that new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as UK Heritage Calendar, Library Section and UK Heritage Courses Index, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And more can be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thank you very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly, and we hope you'll return again next week. And from all of us here, we'd like to once again wish you a very happy festive season, and wish you all the best for 2016.